And good evening. It is Intuitive Soul Radio with your host, Lori Houston. And this is the second portion of our evening where I get to discuss a book with an author. And tonight's book is a true story book. The author is Linda Jean McNabb, and the book is called One Again. And it is a true story of a different kind of forgiveness. And, you know, it's one of those books that you might not be expecting everything that's happening, but truly the journey, and as you reach the end of the journey with Linda, you get to really understand a little bit more about not only your own path, but also how to work within that. And you give some excellent tools at the end of the book, and you know, your whole journey is very inspiring because, you know, a lot of us have a journey. A lot of us think that ours is very difficult, and you know, most people, if they read your book, would probably not be able to be able to equal your journey. But at the same time, at the end, you know, you come to a place of becoming one again, which is really quite lovely. So, welcome, Linda Jean.
Thank you, Lori, for having me here today. I'm very honored to be here. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. So can we, I mean, usually what I do is I start with the journey. Obviously, your whole book is about your journey. And, you know, it begins with Hawaii. And then you move through your journey because a lot of it seemed to been, that seemed to have been the turning point, the catalyst for, I guess, finding your way to forgiveness.
Yes. My book starts with a journey that happened about 4 years ago, a hike that I took into the Nepali coast in Kauai, Hawaii. And I had gone there. I had a really good job, and I left it to go there thinking that I needed to write a book. And it was a much different book than the book that I ended up writing. Mm-hmm. But I was told I would write that book in the future. But yeah, I was at a crossroads in my life, like so many of us, you know. And I went into the woods because I felt guided to do that. I really didn't know why I was doing it or what would happen in there. I just knew that I needed to do that, and it was an incredible hike. I mean, that particular hike is 11 miles, and it's very dangerous.
Yeah, I was going to say a little scary.
You know, if there's something about me that I've been afraid my whole life, on one hand, but on the other hand, there's a part of me that's always been fearless. And even though I would be afraid, I never let that stop me. And so I went in there, and by the time I came out, you know, just hiking the trail was transformative. And then I would have vivid dreams while I was in there, and I had visions of the future. And and I was pretty beat up from the trail, I had blisters on my feet. And the whole time I was in there, I was in there for 18 days, I was limping, and I had very little to eat. And so I was like, well, that's okay, I'll just fast, you know. So it was an amazing experience. And when I came out of there, I realized that I had gained my will to live. And this had been happening to me over a period of time, but I made a huge advance in gaining my will to live when I was in there. And I realized that the paradise isn't out there, that it's inside. It's inside all of us. And so it really strengthened me. I really found a lot of inspiration and strength in that. And if you'd like me to, I'll tell a little bit about my childhood and what brought me there.
Yes, I think it's great how you you started with you were born insane and it went downhill from there. But yeah, sure, tell us a little bit about that.
Oh my gosh! When I wrote those two sentences, it was about 4 o'clock in the morning, and I didn't plan on writing those words. You know, my agent and my publisher love those sentences, you know, because it says, I was born August 6, 1957 in Spain. Things pretty much went downhill from there. And you could be an author your whole life and never think of a better opening line than that, right?
Oh, definitely.
And I didn't really know what I was writing at the time because I felt this presence of light with me, guiding me through this whole book. I had just read The Disappearance of the Universe by Gary Renard and the Your Multiple Reality, and I had become a student of A Course in Miracles as a result of reading those books. And an amazing thing happened at 4 o'clock in the morning, and I started writing those sentences. I wrote those sentences, and then I started writing my life story. And as I wrote my life story, I began forgiving it, using the teachings from Gary Renard's book.
Right.
Now, I never planned on doing this. It's almost like I was a robot, and I just got out of the way, and I let this story come through. And I never planned on revealing the things I revealed about myself. I really reveal my deepest, darkest shame. A lot of people have told me, they call it raw. You know, the only way I could do that, Lori, was I had to become liberated from what happened to me. I had a traumatic childhood, just for your listeners, and I was gang raped at the age of 13. So after that happened, I didn't tell anybody because I really didn't understand what had happened to me. I didn't know what sex was, let alone what a gang rape was. And so I was, you know, I felt damaged, but I felt a lot of shame and fear around it, which I understand is typical for a lot of children that are sexually assaulted or abused. And I blamed myself. I thought it was my fault. And I went on with my life. I started substance abusing. I became very promiscuous because I thought that's what I needed to do in order to be accepted, loved, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
And I became an alcoholic. I ended up smoking 3 packs of cigarettes a day. And there was even a short stint where I prostituted myself. You know, it was a long climb out. At the age of 29 is when I started, when I was introduced to metaphysical teachings. And that's when I started to climb out of that. And, you know, before we go any further, I just want to tell everybody out there that's listening that now I see everything that happened to me as a gift, absolutely everything, because it facilitated my spiritual awakening. But I also want to say it's not the only way. And now I have found another way that is much easier. And but I'm still grateful for all of it because at the age of 29, my first spiritual mentor, Jean St. Martin, told me that in everything, even the most horrendous things, there's a gift. And she said, what do you imagine the gift would be from being raped? And I said, I didn't know. And she said, well, when you heal from it, that's how you will help the world. And so, you know, it's an amazing thing for me. And I consider it all a gift, except Lori, there was one thing that was unforgivable. You want me to tell you what that was?
Sure.
Okay. In the 80s, you'll appreciate this. In the 80s, I went to my hairstylist, and he gave me a really bad perm. But other than that, everything.
You couldn't find the gift in that one, huh?
And I always tell people, it's been nearly a decade since I've abused any substance other than chocolate.
Wow. Yeah, chocolate's one of those things. But, you know, I have to talk about, you know, the bit about shame. You know, there's an author who's who has come on a few times on my show, who's from Toronto, so I get to interview him in person, whose name is Jeff Brown, and he actually believes that, you know, shame is one of the biggest problems in our society, that because of the shame we hold and it, and not understanding at age 13, I mean, how could you? And then, you know, believing that that was how you are loved and accepted as a woman. Like, I mean, it makes complete sense. And I think there are a lot of women, you know, in such a sexually repressed society that we live in, where we become so obsessed. I mean, if you're a woman who likes men, I mean, that is, you know, often a route that we have to explore to understand ourselves and to understand, you know, the deeper meaning within our lives as to what sexuality means. And, you know, is that the only way to make men love us?
Yes. It's, one of the things that I realized is, you know, at the age of 29, I was introduced to metaphysics. My introduction came through Shirley MacLaine's movie, Out on the Limb.
Right.
And like for a lot of people my age. And it was a long climb out, but I started it because I was determined. And even as a small child, my earliest memories were, there's got to be something better than this. There's got to be a better way than this, you know.
Yeah.
And so at the age of 29 was when I finally made the decision that, you know, I can't repeat what the life my parents lived or the life my ancestors lived, you know. That I saw these cycles that were being repeated generation after generation. And part of that is that, that what we need isn't important. That what our fathers need is what's most important, and then what our mothers need, and then what our older siblings need. And so that's the way it was in my family, and I've talked to other people, and I know that this is it. Big theme that has perpetuated, you know, that you're taught that, and that you're, what you need isn't important.
Right.
And so I've had incredible insights, and I'd like to share that with you, but I'd like to give you a little bit of how I got to this, a little bit more about how I got to this point, if that's okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
Is this, how long is this interview?
It's an hour.
Oh, good. Okay, so at the age of 29, I started getting introduced into metaphysical studies, spiritual studies, and I read a lot of the books, Shakti Gwan, is that how you say it?
Shakti?
Yeah, she said, you know, love yourself.
Oh, yeah, Shakti.
And visualization, and, you know, there are a lot of books about love yourself, and I'm like, okay, all right, you know. How do you do that?
Exactly.
You know, it sounded great. And, you know, I love Marianne Williamson and Shirley MacLaine. Maya Angelou was a huge influence of mine. She's a woman who was raped as a child. And the man who raped her, he ended up being killed by people that she knew, I believe.
Wow.
And so she thought, because she told on him, that her voice caused his death, and so she didn't speak for quite a while.
Wow.
She's a huge inspiration to me because she says, you know, the things that happen to us can change us, but they cannot diminish us. And she told her whole story of her life. There was a time when she was a prostitute and a madam, and she didn't apologize for anything in her life. She just told her story. And I really admired that. She's definitely one of my role models. And, you know, Shirley MacLaine taught me that I have a real voice. There is an inner voice, and that it is real, and to pay attention to it. And, Marianne Williamson taught me that the most important relationship is the relationship with our source of love, that's the most important relationship. And if we take care of that relationship, everything else, we will know what to do in the world, and everything else will take care of itself. And so these were my early teachers, along with, you know, an actual spiritual mentor that I started getting help with. And And so I was like reading a lot of books, and I was getting a very good intellectual understanding of the truth. What I wasn't getting was an experience of the truth, a consistent experience of the truth. I tried all the formulas and the steps, and, you know, my life was still very up and down. And I know a lot of people can relate to that. So when I was about in my late 30s, I ran across a little book called Conversations with God by Neil Donald Walsh. You familiar with that?
Oh, absolutely, yep.
Yeah. And I remember waiting for his books, next books to come out, and I listened to every one of them on tape, his first five books. There's three Conversations with God books, Friendship with God, Communion with God. And my life was, you know, it was a mess at that point. I didn't drink as much as I had been in my 20s. If I had been, I wouldn't have been alive. And so I had begun the forgiveness process. I had a lot of anger issues with my father because he had beaten me. And really, he represented men to me. So the men, the relationships I had with men were not good because they were just as broken as I was, you know, the men that I drew into my life. And so, you know, by this time, I had been drinking off and on since the age of 29. I drank less, but then it would be off and on depending on how I felt. I also suffered from suicidal depression from the time I was quite young, and I had nightmares from the time I was, from this traumatic childhood. I had nightmares for many years. And so I still, you know, I was still having a lot of trouble by my late 30s. And when I started reading, I started getting his books on tape. And I was so determined, Lori. I listened to those tapes every day, nearly every day of my life for about 3.5-4 years.
Wow.
And he said, you know, God is perfect love, which was new to me because the God that I grew up with was angry and punished.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I thought when I did something wrong, that was God punishing me. So I felt that tremendous shame and guilt, but I didn't know why. You know, I didn't understand why I felt that. It was the shame, like you said, a big problem in our world. I think guilt goes hand in hand with that.
Oh, yeah.
There's like this shame-guilt thing going on. I always felt like I had done something wrong,
and
that I was in trouble, and I didn't know what it was. And it's crippling, you know, it's a crippling thing. So I understand that very well. It's like this darkness that lives in you, and you live your life the best you can, but it's like you're carrying around this huge weight on your back and through your life. And that's definitely how my life was. So my story, even though I had the physical abuse and sexual assault in my background, I tell people, you know, really my story is everybody's story because it's a story of being lost and found. And we all had events in our lives that caused us to feel lost and separate from our source. And that's really the only problem I came to know. But when Neil Donald Walsh introduced me to God is perfect love, we are all one, this world is an illusion, I started thinking about those things, and it resonated in me. But still, you know, I felt like I was getting better and I was progressing, but it still felt slow, and things still felt too up and down for me at times. But it was getting better. At the end of that 3.5-4 year period, I remember the addiction of cigarette smoking fall away from me, and it was very miraculous. It was like I remember when it happened. I said, "Man, if I could teach this, you know." But I didn't really understand how it happened. You know, it was like through my own spiritual awakening and becoming, recognizing truly what we are, which is perfect love, these addictions, these things that were killing me, were falling off of me, like a leaf off of a tree. I stopped drinking at the same time, but I went back to that for a little bit. I had stopped drinking for a whole year. But then I went back to it a little bit. And then at the age of 44, I was living in North Carolina, and a man whom I had been dating broke up with me, and it wasn't the first time he'd broken up with me. And I remember going home, it was almost my 44th birthday, it was like right at my 44th birthday, and I got down on my knees and I said to God, I said, look, I have tried all the formulas, all the steps, you know, and if there's a way to have heaven on earth, you need to show me, because I'm not sticking around before a life like this. Either I had a job that I hated and I could pay the rent, or, you know, I started my own business doing what I love doing. I'm really good at organizing, and then I wouldn't have enough money, you know, and it was always a struggle financially. You know, I couldn't pay the rent. I couldn't buy the groceries. And I was going from one dead-end relationship to another. That the guy's face and his name changed, but it was the same relationship over and over. I'll bet a lot of people can relate with that one.
Well, I mean, that seems to be the pattern, isn't it? I mean, until we can truly understand and heal, you know, where it is that we create from, understanding our beliefs. And, you know, you talked about, you know, how we are as women, but, you know, I think part of that's even coming from the collective unconscious. It's not even necessarily that's how you were taught in your family. I think some of us come down and, you know, as we come down onto the planet, you know, we tap into the collective unconscious that teaches us these things. So, and relationships, you know, typically we do choose our parents, you know, whether, you know, sometimes we go from our father to our mother, sometimes we go from our mother to our father, depending on the relationships. And in, you know, in the end, it usually has to be somebody that's comes into balance. When we come into balance, then we can attract somebody that's in balance.
Yeah. You know, for me, I saw that I would attract men that were like my father.
Yeah.
What they needed was more important than what I needed, and I was kind of like a piece of property and that kind of thing. And then I would meet women. My women friends were a lot like my mother. Hmm. So, you know, Jean St. Martin, my first spiritual mentor, she said to me, she said, you know, if you can come to peace with all the relationships of your immediate family, the people you grew up with, there isn't anybody in the world you won't be able to deal with. Because, she said, that doesn't mean that they're at peace.
No.
It means that you're at peace, that when you think of them, when you're with them, that you feel peace and that you feel love for them. And I remember calling her up one day. I must have had some kind of conflict with my mother, you know. And I remember calling her up one day and I said, Jean, I said, I want to do whatever it takes to come to peace with all of these relationships, because I'm not doing this again with these people. I've had enough of them. But, you know, my whole life I felt like I was, little did I know what I was committing to, you know, but my whole life, you know, from the time I was in my early 20s, it was like I was running away from myself. And I ran all the way to Hawaii. It's one of the most remote places on earth. And still, you know, some guy starts talking to me like my mother, and I said, oh my God, I'm on the remote, one of the most remote places on earth, and yet my mother found me. and I mean, no disrespect to her, because, you know, what Jean said is these people are our most intense mirrors, and they're just showing us to ourselves. What, like you said, I can't, I'm not a scientific person with all those explanations, but I know what my experience has been. My experience has been that what's been inside of me, these people have been my most intense mirrors. They're showing me to myself. And people are afraid of that because they think that they're going to see something so hideous that they're going to turn to stone. I'm telling you, if that were true, I would have been turned to stone a long time ago. But you know, it's like, it's just an amazing journey. And if you're willing, you get to a point where you realize that there's nothing to fear but fear itself, you know, and that it has no power over you. And the more you realize that all there is perfect love, that you gather your strength, and strength, talent, and abilities you didn't realize you had, they rise to the surface to help you through all of these things. Because, you know, at the age of 44, I was telling you I had that, I got down on my knees, and what happened was when I went to sleep that night, I woke up, and I was in the oneness. I was like one with everything. And it was an amazing experience that really can't be described in words. But the next day, I started writing, and I've had a desire to write for many years. And Neil Donald Walsh, his publisher, Robert Friedman of Hampton Roads at the time, I remember in 1999 being given by Neil Donald Walsh's foundation his name and address, and I said, that's who's going to publish my book someday. And that was, you know, over 10 years ago, and he is now my publisher. But there was just a part of me that would never let me give up, even though that there was a theme of lack and tremendous guilt and shame in my life that just kept surfacing no matter where I moved, no matter what job I had, no matter what relationship I had. It just kept surfacing, and I felt like I was getting nowhere. And so at the age of 44, I had that dream in the oneness. I'd been living in North Carolina for 8 years, and this voice became a lot louder within me, and it said, you know, I knew when I woke up that I was going to write a book, at least, you know, one book, perhaps more, that would have wisdom in it, that would help other people. And then I was told to sell my things, give my things away, and drive west. And I didn't want to. I said, you know, I had been moving and running my whole life, and I said, no, I can't do it. It's crazy. Even for me, I can't keep moving. And the voice said, you know, if you do this, when you come out the other side of it, you'll never want for anything ever again. So, I mean, I had a beautiful apartment, a beautiful furniture, sunken bathtub, my own washer and dryer, and, you know, I had been maintaining that lifestyle for years, brand new car every other year, and, you know, just beautiful things, and I wasn't happy, my life didn't feel fulfilled, but I had been able to, you know, provide myself with those things, and I knew I was going to have to leave all of that and the comfort of all of that. I mean, I had, Lori, I had standing hair and nail appointments for years of my life. And, you know, cable TV and, you know, all this stuff. And I went from that to driving up to California. By the time I got to California, I had about $50 to my name. And I was living in my car.
Yeah.
And I was in menopause.
Oh, no.
I was, like, in full-on menopause. So try being, you know, I was suicidal, depression, anyhow. And but I'll tell you, though, it was a new day for me when I arrived out here. And, you know, I'm not recommending that people live in their car, but it, up to that point, it was the best time of my life because I came out here to build a new life from the inside out, to build my wealth from the inside out. And, you know, when I got out here, I started meditating day and night, and the nightmares left completely. The depression was fading away. It still was there a little bit, but it was vastly improved to the point where it just wasn't really a hindrance in my life anymore. And, you know, and then that brings me to about 3-4 years ago where the beginning of the book takes place, and I went to Hawaii. And then when I came back from that adventure, and when I went there, I said, look, I felt like I had to write, but I said, I'll give up this need to write just give me peace. And so that's really, I just kept getting more and more clear that none of this matters. You know, it doesn't mean you have to give it up. You just give up your attachment to it. And I was letting go of my attachment to all the things that you think you need to have to be happy. And I just said, just give me the peace. And then I came back to, you know, California, and I just continued on that, and I was very determined about that, and I tried to work, and I couldn't work, and I was told I needed to write this book, and I'm like, okay, but, you know, just, you know, give me the peace, and I didn't realize that the two were related, because really, writing my book, it saved my life and it changed my life. And when I was revealing my deepest, darkest shame, I saw, as I liberated myself from the pain of them, I had all these amazing insights. And I saw that there is nothing to hide from or be ashamed of in all of life. And there's really no one out there to judge me. And that it's all in my mind. And through the teachings of A Course in Miracles and Gary Renard's book, the forgiveness that is taught there is different from what we traditionally think, Lori, where they say, okay, I forgive you, you know, I'm a body and you're a body and you hurt my body, but I'll forgive you anyhow. And you're probably still going to, you know, burn in hell for it, but I'll forgive you anyhow. And so what the difference in this different, you know, my title, my book subtitle is A True Story of a Different Kind of Forgiveness. The difference is that it looks like we have a lot of different problems, but really there's only one problem. And that one problem is that all of humanity suffers from is that we imagine we are separate from our source of perfect love, wisdom, and compassion. And so there's one solution. And the one solution is to connect with our source of perfect love, which is the passion, and allow that to guide our life. And so you, when you're stuck in the world of form and all the points of view, it's like being stuck in the mud, because you're everything is a problem. You solve one problem, there's another problem. Then you solve that, there's another problem. So everything is the problem-oriented approach. When you connect with Source, you that gives you the access, if you will, and words are limited here, because it's not that we need access to anything, because really it's recognizing what is always and forever present is this presence of this perfect love. That is our true nature. That is what we really are. And so when you connect with that, all you can see is solution. And so you know, I saw that I was indestructible, that even though this body could die, that what I am, what we are, the essence of what we truly are, lives on forever, and it's indestructible. So that's how I was finally able to, you know, forgive myself and to alleviate myself of the guilt and the shame. Because, you know, even if we're saying that somebody else is at fault for our troubles, it's still like saying that you're at fault, you know, that we're at fault. So the blame always comes home to roost, whether you're taking it on yourself. And I have noticed that a lot of people that blame themselves, especially children, you know, that were adults that were physically and mentally abused and sexually abused, that they have a tendency to blame themselves and to internalize. And that's where the depression comes from and the suicidal tendencies come from, is because they're not projecting it out into the world. They're taking it on themselves. And then other people, the way they deal with it is they'll project it out in the world, and it's never their fault for anything that's happening in their life. It's always somebody else's fault. And so either way, it's the same problem, that we're feeling lost and separate from our source. And, you know, when we're children, by the age of 7, we have been told that we're a body, that we need things, that there's things we can do. Basically, by the age of 7, we're thoroughly convinced we're a body that could be damaged and die, and that we're limited.
Yeah.
And we're easily misled because we're children. And for whatever reason, the things that happen to us to show us to ourselves, they happen. And then as adults, we can choose once again. We can choose to, we can find another way. And what I saw that one of the biggest insights I had, and I know other people will relate to this, is that the events themselves, 20, 30 years after the fact, they're not the problem. And I never dwelt on that, you know. The problem was, when those events happened, I made judgments. And, like, I was broken forever. Like, no one good would ever love me, and so on and so on. And we all do this. We make all these judgments and all these decisions, and then we forget we make them, but it runs our lives. And that's the darkness that we feel. That's the shame. That's the guilt that we all carry around until we are able to take it to the light of awareness, to the light of perfect love, and shine a light on it. And we see that we just did it to ourselves, that it was all in our mind. The lack, any lack we imagined in our lives, there's not enough love, there's not enough money, there's not enough of everything. It's all in our mind. We did it to ourselves. And it's quite a big joke we play on ourselves. And we get to the point where we laugh a lot because we see the insanity of it. And that's what I meant at the beginning of my book when I said I was born insane. If I wasn't born insane, it happened shortly thereafter because, the true definition of insanity is that we imagine we're separate from our source of perfect love. That's the insanity. And then we play a small game because of it.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's, ultimately that is definitely how we come back to home or come back into the oneness. And I think, I think it's amazing as we were talking about how, children all seem to take everything so literally. Like, children from a divorced family usually think that they're at blame in some way. And I remember, my girlfriend just recently telling me a story where, she remembers very clearly a memory where her parents were fighting and she was holding on to her mother because she felt her father was pushing her out the door to leave. And when she told that to her mother said, "Oh no, your father was pushing me out and you were trying to hold me in." So the way we perceive things, and it's all about the fact that, as you say, by the time of 7, we believe that love and acceptance is conditional. And so we have to put on these masks and we have to do these things and we have to, we don't understand responsibility in a way of empowerment because our whole society is a very victim mentality. So we're very attuned to blaming everything on someone else, or we blame it on ourselves, and that's not what responsibility means. If anything, responsibility empowers us, but we have to see it from that place. We have to be able to see it from that larger picture and come to a place of, I guess, acceptance or understanding that, what we're doing, how we create things in our life, is really about us coming back into wholeness. It's really, every single situation is something we chose to allow us to come back into wholeness.
Yes, it's so well said, Lori. That we imagine we're separate from our source of perfect love really twists our thinking and our perception. It's a twisted perception. It really messes us up. Mm-hmm. And we imagine that we're not loved. We imagine that we're lacking something. And so you know, we blame ourselves. Like you said, I've heard it many, many times that children, when their parents divorce, they think it's their fault.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, until you could tell a child every day it's not your fault, you know, but until they're able to have that experience of their connection with love and see it for themselves, you'll probably never convince them.
Right.
You know, I remember I have a nephew that my the son of my older brother, who's now this, my older brother is now deceased, mm-hmm. but he wasn't able to help my nephew in his life because he was a heroin addict. And I remember telling my little nephew from the time he was a little boy that, you know, you're, because I knew how he felt. I knew that he felt abandoned. I knew he felt unloved. And I just said, you know, your father loves you. He just, he can't even take care of himself.
Mm-hmm.
But it's nothing that you did. It's not your fault. You're, you deserve to have the best, the very best of everything. And, you know, but I can see how that childhood served him because he made a decision at a young age that he was not going to repeat his the life that he had lived as a child.
Nice.
And his mother, they lived on welfare, and his mother is a beautiful person, but she just, you know, they were stuck in that thing, you know, in the projects on welfare, and he went to the service, and he got a college education, and now he's an officer, and he's, you know, has his own family now, and he's not living that life. He decided, and I can't, and I know that because of all of those circumstances, that it facilitated him to, you know, make something of his life, and, you know, make a better life for himself. So, you know, he doesn't, he's never been into drugs or anything because of that, and you know, so we, if people feel like they have no choice or that they're pushed against the wall, but there's always a choice, and our back is never really against the wall. And I'm saying that as somebody who felt that way through most of her life, you know. But there, when, you know, there's a great song by the Beatles called "Let It Be," right?
Mm-hmm.
And you know, so many times when something happens in our lives, we react out of fear. You know, we jump in and out of relationships because of fear. We don't want to be alone, or we think, oh, we need to do this, and we're afraid of that we're not going to survive, so we take jobs we really don't want to take. And trained myself to do, I'm trying to think of a better word, is to just rest in awareness with whatever it is and just let it be, you know, and wait for the answer to come from wisdom.
Mm-hmm.
And most people, and I know it took a lot for me to get there, to be willing to let the answer come. And, you know, I have ended all of my own suffering. I don't experience myself as having problems. And I'll share with you that I just lost a job and my income, and I had to go to my landlady and tell her that I was giving 30-day notice, and that was at the end of January.
Hmm.
And she said, well, you know, she asked me the circumstances and asked me if I wanted to leave, and I said, well, I'd rather stay, but I can't guarantee you that I will have the money to pay you, and I have a security deposit, and I wanted to be responsible, you know, I chose to be responsible and everything, and I wasn't worried about it, and I just kept resting in awareness. I kept connecting with Source, and I'd like to share with you and your audience how I do that.
Yes.
I go into this, I relax my mind and my body, and you know, it's like when you walk on the beach, or you, which I live near the beach and I do that a lot, or you're in nature, or it's kind of almost like meditation, but you're awake.
Mm-hmm.
It's very, this very open-hearted, pure space. For anybody who has a child, the first time you have your child in your arms, and you have this tremendous open-hearted love, and the whole world went away, and you're only there for the benefit of another, or the first time you fell in love with somebody, and everything was great, and it didn't matter what anybody said to you, nothing was going to ruin your day, and all the planets were lined up, and you're so brilliant, and you know, we associate that feeling with the baby or with the significant other, but really, that's our true nature. We can live that way every moment of our life, and even more. And so, you know, what I do is I rest in awareness for short moments, and I repeated that many times until it became automatic, and it's now automatic in my life. And so, you know, and I want to share with your listeners a website that can help them with that if they're interested in that practice. That is what true forgiveness is. True forgiveness is resting in awareness. It's connecting with Source. And when you connect with Source, all the brilliant answers that you need will come to you. And so what happens is you act out of wisdom or you don't ask. And you'll notice that wisdom, love, and compassion will pervade your life to the point where your well-being becomes completely stabilized. And you have no suffering. You have the confidence that you know anything that comes up, you can handle. You know, for example, somebody came along and offered to pay my rent for me through the middle of April. Now, I don't know what's going to happen after that, but I trust in the connection with Source. I trust that I am provided for. And so the exciting thing, Lori, is, yeah, I've ended my suffering, and I don't experience myself as having problems in the world anymore. And that's huge, okay, because just accomplishing that, I could die and be happy, because decades of my life, I went to sleep at night and I didn't want to wake up, you know, and I never imagined that I could feel this free. You know, all that shame, all that guilt, just, it's not there anymore. And the darkness, it left me. And I did it through connecting with Source, you know, connecting with the Source of Perfect Love. And so just to accomplish that is huge.
Mm-hmm.
But the real thing to me, the real joy to me, is that by doing this, and I believe that this is what's true for me is true for everybody and more. And I want to say I really have nothing to teach anybody, because the real teaching is each person's direct experience of connecting with Source and living their life from that pure space. Because nobody, no matter how much they love you, no matter how well-intentioned they are, cannot tell you your heart, the voice of your heart, which is, to me, synonymous with the voice of Source and Perfect Love. Some people may call that God, they may call it Holy Spirit, Higher Self, whatever name you want to give it. But it's the feeling of peace that we're all after. It's stable well-being. No matter what we think we need to have to be happy, really that's what we're after. And when you have that stable well-being, it doesn't matter what's happening out there. And that's really when it can all come to you. But whether it comes to you or not, it won't matter to you. And you're not asked to give up anything in the world. It's just you let go of your attachment to it. And that's the only way you're ever really going to enjoy it anyhow. That's the only way you're really going to have anything to offer in relationship to another. When you harmonize the relationship with awareness, with perfect love, you'll have the wisdom to know how to take care of your body, to what job you should have, what job you shouldn't have, where to live, and how to harmonize all of your other relationships with people. You'll stop using your relationships as a battleground for my issues and your issues, and they'll just be there for joy, because you will rely on resting in awareness. You will rely on connecting with Source to take care of you in every way and to resolve all of your conflicts. And so getting back to the real gift is that through resting in awareness, I've become more whole and broken. I've become more sane than anything. And am I still working on it? Yes. But and when you stabilize your well-being, are you going to be walking on water? Probably not, but you won't care. And someday, will we walk on water? Will we spontaneously heal? Yes, we will. I know that as sure as I'm sitting here. But there, you can make the journey there a very pleasant, joyful journey filled with abundance and love. And by the reward, you know, another really limited word, but just for language purposes to speak, you know, the human languages, my reward for being diligent and connecting with Source and making a commitment to having peace above all else, my reward for that is that my view to a vision, a world vision of a world where all children are safe, has been unveiled to me, if you will. And the vision is so powerful and strong in my life that I don't need to take care of myself anymore, because I'm having the experience, the connection to Source of it being needless, ageless, timeless, and there's nothing I can't handle. So I'm just filled with being of benefit to others, and that's our true nature. That's what happens to us. And so this vision is so powerful in my life that it's as if it's already happening. And that, so if anybody says, oh, you can't do this, or you can't, that's impossible, it means nothing to me, because it's as if I'm already living in that world where all children are safe, where the rape of the child is no more. And I see a lighted path lighting my way and providing me with everything I need to make that real, and that it's not just my vision, it's everyone's vision. And yet, it's like humanity is this beautiful mosaic, and we each have a tile that we are so perfectly suited for. And you can see millions of people could have written my book, Lori. Millions of people could have this vision and be a spokeswoman for this. I don't know why it's me. I just know that there's no place where I end in the beginning. So this, whatever I'm doing it from that place of wholeness. And I believe everybody has a title, and that when they commit to making peace, you know, they're, you know, and not letting anything stop them from having that inner peace, I believe that everybody will find their title. And there's no, this isn't the career I would have chosen for myself, but I can't imagine anything that would give me more joy to think that I can help children from not having to have that experience and the devastation that follows. Or if a young woman has been harmed, or a young man has been harmed, that I can help spare them, that we as a people can help spare them from years of devastation. So you can see how I'm perfectly suited to be a spokeswoman for that vision. And I have huge, giant plans of that brilliant idea that have come to me from that vision that I'm going to be executing and carrying out, and I'm working on it now. And I'm going to be doing some really bold stuff that some people are going to think is crazy, but I would just want to share with you this story for an ending note to inspire people. Because I lived in Dallas, Texas years ago, and it was a huge bustling metropolis at the time. You know, I'm sure it still is. And there were two major highways that ran through, and man, I'm telling you, there was Rolls Royces and Maseratis and Ferraris and cars I can't even pronounce. And it was so that there was so much going on in the early 80s in that town, and that there was such a boom there that the streets couldn't build the highway fast enough. And so every morning during rush hour, the highways, these two main highways leading, you know, throughout the city, were just crammed bumper to bumper with all these cars. And everybody's like just trying to get to work to make more money to buy more stuff, basically. And, you know, I did it too, you know. And one morning there was an apartment building right next to the highway that caught on fire. And this is an example of true human nature. I'll tell you, those people driving down that road stopped before the fire trucks could get there. They stopped, they got out of their cars, and they made sure that everybody in that building was safe, and then they drug their furniture out. Mm-hmm. And I said, you know, that's human nature. That is true human nature, to be of benefit to others. This other stuff you hear about people being evil, that is not the truth. The truth is, perfect love is all that exists, and that's true human nature. And so what I say to people is, I say, you know what? The world is on fire. Stop your car and get out and do something. You know, not everybody is going to be involved with me in my vision, my particular tile, but we all have a tile. So find out, make it your business. Find out what your tile is and go, because that is where your fulfillment and joy is. And, you know, that is where your abundance is. And I, that, at least that's what my experience is so far.
Mm-hmm. Well, you have given us again a journey to allow people to really accept and love themselves, because that's really what you, I mean, your experiences, you barely touched on some of them without, you know, just going into, you know, the basics of them. But, you know, the journey you had has been incredible, and to the point where you've, you know, you spoke to your rapist, and even though you found forgiveness in yourself, you actually helped him find forgiveness in him. So you've done things that I think people would find very courageous. And I think it's just very inspiring that you've been able to move through your life the way you have and found, you know, that oneness and are now that voice to allow that, you know, we really are children of God, children of oneness, and we're all experiencing this one place, this oneness in many different ways, but we're here, we're learning, and we're growing in a way that allows us to truly experience that love.
Yes, and you know, the man that you referred to that raped me and instigated the entire gang rape, he recently contacted me and asked me to have dinner with him this summer. I'll be in my hometown somewhere at a reunion. You know, I agreed to do that. He's the one that came to me and apologized to me and, you know, wanted to have a friendship with me. And I believe he was sincere in that. I don't believe that he's harmed anyone else. And so I don't wish to reveal his identity for that reason. I don't feel like it would serve him in his life. And, you know, the perpetrators many times that are perpetrating these crimes against children were at themselves, at one time they were children that were abused, assaulted, neglected. And so, you know, I see solutions to protect and prevent and to end the cycle of this epidemic of sexual abuse and assault. But, you know, we need to reach one arm out to the perpetrators, because we're one human family, and real love excludes no one. These people that have harmed, committed these crimes, they are not garbage to be thrown out and to be cast aside. They are part of our human family. And you know, real love excludes nobody and includes everybody. So they, through their own healing, can become an integral part of the solution. Mm-hmm. And there's an army of them, just like there's an army of adults that were harmed as children, and through their own healing, they can become the army that teaches the next generation of children how to protect themselves and not be afraid.
Yeah. And I think, you know, a big part of it comes from, you know, telling your story so that you can release that shame and that guilt, because I think it's only through that, because, you know, yes, the victim feels the shame and guilt, but so does the victor. Like, there's no way that somebody could do something like that and not have some sort of life that needed to be healed, some sort of issue that needed to be understood. And so, yeah, that's the cycle of love. And I think that's, you know, that's what will heal, you know, the shame and guilt that permeates this planet.
Yeah, that's very well said, Lori. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. That's, you know, Albert Einstein said we can't use the same thinking that created the mess to solve the mess.
Yeah.
You know, putting people in prison, yeah. At this point in our development, we do need to definitely protect society from some of these people. Mm-hmm. But we can still help them.
Mm-hmm.
We can still help them.
Yes, and seeing them as people and loving them. Well, it has been a great pleasure talking with you. I look forward to hearing what your new adventures are going to be, and let's keep in touch.
Okay, thank you so much, Lori, for having me here today and allowing me to share this with others.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. It's a great story. So get Linda Jean's book. It's called One Again. All right. Take care, and we'll be back next week.